Welcome to the Ninja Lane Podcast. In this episode, we talk about 3D printing and how that's going to affect your life in the future. And we look at Borderlands 2 and the new DLC and level cap increase. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McKay.
Dennis, I've been reading a lot lately about 3D printing, and really there's a lot that I get excited about. So I thought it'd be fun to talk about just some of the cool innovations in what I think is the next big thing in computer technology.
Before you go too far, I'm going to play a little dumb here. What is 3D printing?
So 3D printing, and you can't possibly be, you know, entirely unaware of what this is if you're out there, but if you are, it's the opportunity to take a printer like your home DeskJet or LaserJet printer, and instead of printing on paper, you print in three dimensions. So you can build simple shapes up to more complex shapes at home. So think, if you would, if you had the ability to take a hot glue gun is maybe the best example. And instead of just gluing stuff together, you could actually use this to draw in space toys or other plastic products. And when you're done, you have a usable product.
Mm-hmm. Well, back in high school and early college days, I was doing a lot of welding. And you would kind of do the same thing where you build a pad weld. So you just run welds over top of it. And you could actually add an extra inch to your piece of plate metal.
Yeah, it's very similar. What makes 3D printing so neat, though, is how precise it can be. Now, the big thing about 3D printing to remember is this is not an entirely new idea. Rapid prototyping has been around for quite a while. And in fact, I worked for a major printing manufacturer. And one of the really cool things to do was go down into the machine shop, and I'm sure you've had a similar experience, and watch them take a solid piece of plastic, ABS I think it was, and carve the pieces out of it that they needed to build these precise, in this case, printers.
Yeah, that was the model shop. I've been down there. I love that place.
Yeah, model shop, or you'll hear the CNC machines and that sort of stuff. But that was taking a solid piece of product and subtracting away till you got what you wanted.
Yeah, that was a CNC machine. It's kind of like if you're, you know, thinking in terms of enthusiast overclocking and stuff, that's the water blocks. All the water blocks are done on a CNC machine. You have a tool path and they go and carve out where the water channels are going to be. Even the LN2 containers are done the same way. It's always a subtractive process though.
So 3D printing is going the opposite direction and doing additive. And I no longer work in that major printer manufacturer. So I work in a medical field now, as we've talked about in the past. So these days, when I hear about 3D printing, I get excited about some of the medical breakthroughs. For example, 3D printers now have the ability to print functional skin that has blood vessels and capillaries in it. They build these skin patches for people that are burn victims or have severe skin issues, and you can actually print it out on essentially a laser printer, of course, using biological matter, I guess would be the term, instead of ink.
Yeah.
And it functions as skin, and your real skin can grow back under it. More recently, I read about a really awesome process where you can replace people's broken discs in their backs. Now, this is kind of personal to me because my wife has had some problems with a degenerative disc, but what they're doing is so neat. They take an x-ray and an MRI, and I'm not even really sure what all, and they can scan your back, and they can rebuild you that disc out of a material that can be accepted by your body and put it in there and replace that disc.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Teflon sockets that, you know, when they rebuild your hip, you know, they do the surgery and then the doctor's actually there building the socket to make it fit.
Exactly. And as if that's not enough, Dennis, within the last month, they went in and they did a 95%, think about this for a minute, that's nearly 100% replacement of a skull using a 3D printed biological material that actually goes in and it allows your body to accept this, and it will let your normal biological process build and repair that just like bone.
So it's going to be kind of a skeleton, and then a couple years down the road, you're going to have actually bone material on this?
Yeah, blood vessels can move into it, accepts marrow, all that kind of stuff. Just as if they had somehow been able to find a donor skull for you.
Wow.
That's crazy. And I know this sort of stuff is happening out in the regular world too, but the medical field is really driving this because we have such a need to replace our bodies as they break down.
Well, yeah, and you don't have donors every day. And that's the big problem because, you know, there's not enough donor material available. And, you know, it's only good for a couple of hours.
Yeah, and I'm always reading about how we're finding ways to, you know, manufacture cells and the future there, and how, you know, what was the most recent thing? Injecting bee venom to maybe cure AIDS. I mean, all this kind of neat technology that's out there. But to me, what's crazy is that we've actually found a way to take a printer and build pieces of our bodies in 3D. So that's kind of neat to me. Like I say, everybody's kind of aware that this 3D printing's out there, but I think the general consensus is not in my lifetime.
Well, no, but and the reality is it's been out for what, about 10 years now?
Yeah.
It's like kind of some of the first ones were, you know, pretty big machines, and they were only able to make limited size items, you know, maybe 4x4. So it'd be like an action figure or a small model of the White House, for instance, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And now these machines have gotten to the point where they're more efficient, so you can make them bigger and actually make larger items to the point where you have this something that's an infinitive length. Like, for instance, Fugger, he's the guy that is one of the famous overclockers that started Extreme Systems. I heard at CES when I was talking to him that one of his side businesses now is actually 3D printing. And I was kind of curious about that. So I was asking him, so what are you building? He's like, well, like, you know, custom floor mats for casinos and stuff like that. And I'm like, that's kind of a perfect application.
Right.
Because these are all just plastic-based products. But at that point, you can put custom logos on there, mm-hmm. put anything you want on there, and they only have to last 2 or 3 years, and then you can go and replace them.
Interestingly enough, I think maybe the first application that we'll be seeing is custom shoes. Nike and New Balance and a couple of other companies are actually using this technology right now to scan your feet. Not that much different than what some of these shoe companies have done before, but they're building, you know, not at a level that you and I would go out and buy, but they're building custom track shoes for Olympic athletes, where the shoe is actually manufactured with a grid pattern on the fly based on the shape of someone's foot.
Orthopedic shoes, for instance.
Uh-huh.
People search high and low to find the perfect shoe because not everybody makes something to fit their foot.
Mm-hmm.
Athletes kind of have it real easy in that they can go, and they're sponsored for the most part, but they can go to a shoe manufacturer and say, hey, I would like to have something custom for this foot that will help me run faster or more efficiently without having a lot of damage. If you bring that to the mainstream, to where somebody could come off the street and say, hey, I need to have a shoe matched to my foot that is slightly off size,
mm-hmm.
they can have that done.
Yeah, I really think that that may be the first place that the general audience sees this. You go down to your shoe shop, you buy the premium shoe based on the looks, they scan your foot, and they build you a shoe while you do the rest of your shopping. So anyway, it'll be interesting to see, but I think, again, I want to revisit the fact that most people think that a 3D printer is out of their league or off this lifetime or, you know, maybe my kids or their kids' kids. Because the reality is that 3D printing has reached a level where you might be able to buy one of these today. You can get, not maybe the cutting-edge technology, but you can get a good 3D printer for around $2,000, maybe less by the time you hear this. Now, these are first, second-gen home units, ABS-based plastic, mm-hmm. but you can use these to build simple shapes, toys, game pieces, you know, maybe a coffee mug, that sort of stuff, in your home right now. And, as if that's not enough, Dennis, you know, I like to follow Kickstarter. It's sort of a guilty pleasure for me. But it hasn't been that long ago. In fact, a good friend of mine in March purchased a 3D doodler or 3Doodler product through Kickstarter.
Now, with Kickstarter, you have to remind me here, but you basically pledge a certain amount of money based off of a price structure that they set up. And then when the product comes to market, they send you one.
Yeah. So Kickstarter is a lot of things, and not all of them are good. But if you think of it as a venture capital opportunity, it's an opportunity for you to go out to the site, which is Kickstarter.com, and look at projects in a variety of categories. I like to look at games because, you know, I'm a gamer.
Yeah.
And get in basically by financing the development or the come to market of a product or service. And in this case, the 3Doodler was an opportunity to purchase, well, for lack of a better term, a 3D printing pin.
Yeah, which kind of looked like a plastic version of a hot glue gun mm-hmm. once you saw the video. But the amazing thing is how many backers and how much money they banked.
So let's talk about this a little bit. I've got to put a disclaimer, if you will, before this section in that, you know, anytime you use Kickstarter, There is risk involved. Just like any investment, you might lose your money. And the 3D Doodler is closed, so you can't, I'm sorry, you can't still finance it, but you can still probably get yourself in line to purchase one of these.
Yeah, well, and you can also oodle what people have already bought.
Exactly. So back in February 19th, the 3D Doodler folks, it's a company called WobbleWorks LLC out of Boston, Massachusetts, started a Kickstarter, and their goal was to get $30,000 to help bring this 3D Doodler to market.
And what was the total they got?
$2,344,134.
That seems to be a little bit more than 30
grand. It's a little more than 30 grand. That means that 26,457 people believed in this product enough to put money down on its development.
Right.
And now, for, oh, I know this is where you're going, for
$50. All right, I'm just going down. Just going down. We had 100 backers at $50.
For $50, you could get this thing. So if you're not looking at the site on Kickstarter, you're forgiven. It's in the show notes. But picture, if you will, essentially what to me looks like a little handheld Dremel.
Yeah, it's a little Dremel. And based off of the video, it squirts out a little bit of ABS plastic that quickly cools to the point where you can draw letters. You can draw 3D shapes. So you can actually pull a vertical off of a piece of plastic that's attached to the paper and build a 3D shape with this pen. So it's kind of a rapid prototyping tool in that it lays down a solid piece of plastic, however thick you want it to be. They, in the video, they were building the Eiffel Tower, which is the perfect opportunity for a exposed structure.
Yeah. And you can lay it down in pieces and kind of glue them together with the product. Now, this is maybe a stretch on the term 3D printer, but the technology is very similar. Instead of laying down very precise ABS, this lets you essentially doodle on the fly. So it's very accurately, I think, named a 3D Doodler, or 3D Doodler, sort of is how you say it. But it just shows you that the price point for at least the simplest form of 3D printing is already at a point where you might even be able to impulse purchase one of these things.
Right. Now, their $30 or $30,000 price point that they were going after is, I would say, accurate for this type of a product, because it's not going to be widely accepted as the go-to version of, you know, creating something in 3D.
No.
I see it for like more like arts and crafts, or even in the architecture field when you're building a version of a model that you want to show the client, so you can build your quickly build your building and show it to them. I almost see it as being kind of a toy, in that after the honeymoon's over, it's like, well, what am I going to do with this thing?
Yeah, right? Make crafty stuff with your kids on the fly, as opposed to going back to more of a traditional desktop 3D printer, which is laying down layers and building very precise shapes in multiple colors, often at the same time.
Right.
And in fact, the newer 3D printers can lay down different types of plastic at different densities at the same time, much like you'd lay down different colors of ink with a color laser printer or color inkjet printer.
Yeah. So in terms of sky's the limit, what can you do with this stuff?
Well, of course, it's really dependent on your budget, because the type of machine determines A, what size you can build, and B, what types of material. So what's most interesting about it is it gives you the opportunity to purchase the machine at whatever level you want, and then you can go out to the internet, and really there's a huge open source movement where you can share patterns and projects and that sort of thing. I mean, toys really seems to be what's driving that market. Just simple plastic toys are the easiest thing to manufacture, but they're not cheap in the stores.
Right. Well, a good example would be like a chess kit.
Yes.
Say you want to build a chessboard. So you can draw out the chessboard on a piece of paper, but the pieces are the hardest part. So maybe you download a pattern, you can build an entire chess set out of that, right?
Well, we've all seen the custom chess sets where the different pieces are, you know, modeled after Hobbit characters or, you know, whatever you're into, and how much those cost. But if you could manufacture a set like that at home, you could buy the patterns, you could build it, it lets a lot of really kind of neat niche products suddenly be available for just the cost of the pattern and the distribution.
Now, playing a little devil's advocate here, what about first generation Star Wars figures?
Oh, you know, it's funny that you say that, because that was one of the things I thought of. What about all these really awesome toys that aren't around anymore, or that you just can't afford because, well, like the Star Wars figures, they came out, they don't make them anymore, and they're collectible. Well, all you need is one enterprising dude to scan that bad boy and you're building them at home, which leads to some really interesting conversations about the types of things you can build. I'd like to, you know, maybe the example for me is a Lego set. Remember when you used to go out and buy a box of Legos and they didn't really come with any more than simple patterns?
Oh, yeah. They had like, you could build a house and this is how you put the blocks together.
Yeah.
But the idea was that you could build anything.
But nowadays, when you go buy a Lego set, what do you get? You get a set to build an X-Wing or a set to build SpongeBob SquarePants. I mean, you just don't buy a generic set anymore. I mean, I'm sure you can, but that's not really the business model.
Well, no, and if you build an X-Wing, what else can you build with it?
Right.
Nothing.
And these things come out and then they retire because everybody wanted that set bought it. But what if you could sell just the pattern and I could build the kit at home?
Oh, well, that seems like a pretty good idea.
Exactly.
You know, like say it's one of those 3D puzzles or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, it has a little textured outside on it. You download the pattern, you 3D print the thing, and you put it together.
Yeah. Now, I know that when I look at it, I see toys. But when I go out, I hear about medical, which is, of course, very expensive. And mm-hmm. that's going to happen maybe in your or my lifetime. But let's talk about some of the cool projects that are happening now. There is, as much as it scares me, there's a movement to build 3D guns at home right now.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to say that there was also a CSI episode about that. It put some reality behind actually 3D printing something as illicit as that. I mean, airsoft, I can understand because those are all really plastic guns. But
right.
Like a real gun, a Glock, for instance, mm-hmm. the whole thing is plastic. The only thing that's metal is the action in the barrel, right?
Yep. So you just need a printer that's able to use a material that has enough density or enough strength, and you're good. So there's kind of a Wild West that we need to explore. And I'm reminded a lot about the MP3 explosion. And, you know, to use Napster as an example, Napster or that type of software really changed everything about movies and music distribution, DRM, copy protection. I mean, it drove the entire industry in a completely different direction at a really completely high speed. And if you look at that same concept, you say, well, what stops me from reproducing those rare Star Wars figures and selling them on eBay? You know, what keeps me from downloading that Lego set and making copies for my buddies? I mean, there's a huge legal gray area where we have to talk about, you know, what does the company own? Do they own the pattern? Do they own the plastic? And I think we all kind of have an idea of where that sits, but how can we enforce it? And then you take that whole train of thought and you say, well, what if I could build an AR at home with my 3D printer? That's a little scary.
Well, yeah, you don't necessarily have to have a license for that, that's for sure.
Exactly. And out on the open market, maybe I'm buying a lower that some dude printed in his basement. I don't know if it's made from the right kind of plastic, if it's going to blow up in my hands, if it's traceable. If I could build a whole freaking gun at home, shoot somebody, and then melt it back down and build a Barbie.
Now, that thing that you just mentioned about melting it back down,
mm-hmm.
that got me thinking about something from my past.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, this is kind of dating me. So, you know, if anybody goes and looks this up on like eBay or something, but here, let me go find it. Hold on.
All right. Oh, he's walking away here. Deep in the heart of the Ninja Lane Labs.
AKA the garage. Oh, what? Yeah, here it is.
What is that?
Oh, this is a toy that I probably should have thrown away.
Oh, my heavens.
All right, so put this down.
All right, you got to tell the folks what this is.
All right. This is a Master Caster. All right, so I'm going to pull this out of here. I'm going to put some of this down.
Master Caster. It says age limit recommended is 8, just for the listeners. Don't try this at home.
All right, so it looks like it's a part right now, but the way this works is that there's a little dial here, and as I'm turning it right now, there's this little lever, right?
Oh, I see, yeah.
Okay, so there's this crucible here. That holds wax. All right,
oh,
and it looks like there's a little piece here that's... This is a little... Oh, that's a cap.
Unnecessary piece.
Yeah, so any of it.
If you're listening at home and you're not familiar with the terminology, it's essentially a little foundry with a basket that you heat up, you put hot wax in.
Yes, yes.
And then you... it looks like you bring it down using a gearing system, and oh, now he's pulling out the cool stuff.
All right, so there's these little rubber molds of cars, and there should be... Yeah, there's five of them.
Nice.
All right, so... You have this futuristic car here, and then you have like an F1 racer, and then you have a fancy one with a dual engine. And all right, there was a top on it that looks like it's gone now.
I have never seen one of these things before.
Right. So anyway, there's this little cage that goes down like that, and then there's a tray. So,
dude, you're going to have to post pictures of this for sure.
All right, so
on the podcast.
Yeah. All right, so we have this mold, and you put like some Hot Wheels wheels in here, and there's little gaps, right?
I see it, yeah.
Okay.
So you're putting wheels and axles on just like you would with a regular Matchbox or Hot Wheels car.
Yeah, and then you put it in this tray, and then you stick it on here. And then when the wax is all melted, you crank it in there, and then the crucible pours the wax into the mold.
Oh, I see. So you're basically making a wax-bodied car.
Yeah, and then when you roll it back out, it's still a little hot at that point. You set it aside over here on the side.
Right.
Cools down, and then just like any other mold, you release it, it pops the car out, and then you can play with the car.
And when you're done, you melt it down and make others, I guess, huh?
Yeah, or if you're a destructive kid like I was, you just break them apart and then you drop them back in the top and melt them again.
Nice. I have never seen one of these things before.
Yeah. Now, you know, this is kind of old, but going back to about 3D printing of toys.
Right.
You know, this was, what, 20, 30 years ago?
Oh, yeah.
And people were building their own toys at this point. And this is something you could buy off the shelf.
Yeah, and I'm sure there are examples of that today. I mean, I seem to remember commercials for a Ben 10 alien kit where you make little gel creatures.
So, yeah.
And not as revolutionary as you'd think. It's just a question of getting the technology down to a price point where people can afford it and then getting them out there to one of these patterned sites. I think we're going to see this in our lifetime where people are going to be able to buy these things and construct simple toys at least at home, if not, you know, more impressive stuff like
a moon base, maybe?
Yeah. So let's talk about the future. The moon base.
The moon base, yeah. There was a news article saying that to build a moon base, they could send some robots that were 3D printer robots to the moon, grab moon dust, mix it with a binder, and then build a foot-thick cage, basically, to build a dome, a geodesic dome. At that point, it'd be airtight. They could send another robot out there to go and create an atmosphere. You know, us, we could fly out there and go and visit this moon base. And it would be just like walking into a large spaceship that was on the moon.
So NASA is, for the lack of a better term, taking the moonshot on this. And they're developing these robots right now to build remotely using 3D printing technology, potentially in the future, moon bases or who knows what with the technology.
Yeah, and these are robots, so all you have to do is program it and what it is that you want to build, and factories do that every day, all the time, right now. The only difference is it will be off the Earth. So you tell where you want to build, what to build, and
all you need is enough raw materials to make it happen. So folks, check out the show notes. We'll have some really cool links on 3D printing, 3D printers and 3D printing projects, including that cool pin. I encourage you to check it out and rethink what you think is possible with printing in your own home, because I think if you don't, your children will definitely have a 3D printer in their home.
I'm not sure if you noticed, Darren, but last month was PAX East.
I did notice. Very excited about PAX.
Yeah, it was the week of March 22nd over the weekend. A lot of my hardware friends were out there, you know, pimping their wares and checking out all the gamer geeks that were there hanging out and stuff, and cosplayers and stuff.
Yeah, I would love to get over there, but I'm having a hard enough time getting to PAX up in Washington, and it's close.
Yeah, PAX Prime, it's almost too close not to go, but since they don't really offer press passes, it's kind of hard for me to justify going up for a day.
One of these days we're going to have to go, though, just because it's become such a huge big deal.
Yeah. Now, one of the reasons it's a real big deal is because game developers do their panels at PAX. You know, it's a perfect opportunity to announce new DLC, new games, new ways of 3D rendering, you know, anything game-related.
And hands-on demos.
Hands-on demos, you gotta love that. There's always a demo of some game. Well, Rage was at PAX Prime.
Right.
3 months before you could get it. I'm not sure if that actually went well, but it was still on display. And this time, at PAX East, Gearbox had their panel, and I tuned into the live stream to watch all of the new DLC and Borderlands 2 stuff.
Well, and you know, we've been playing a lot of Borderlands 2. It's our Ninja Lab's favorite at the moment.
Yeah, at the moment. It's the game of the month. It's kind of the past few months.
Kind of pushed aside Skyrim a little bit, which is good because Skyrim doesn't support the multiplayer. So it's given us an opportunity to play a game together again.
Yeah, and reach out to some new friends. We had a couple of Canadian guys come in and play with us the other night when I was in Ultimate Vault Hunter mode.
Very exciting.
Spoiler.
So part of the new Borderlands 2 excitement. So now, just to let people know, if you're in a cave or under a rock and you haven't checked out Borderlands 2, the only reason not to get it is if you're offended by tongue-in-cheek adult themes.
Yeah, a little sexual innuendos here and there.
Be aware that that would chase you away, and I'd understand that, and I'd send you back to Skyrim. But if that stuff doesn't bother you, what I would say is maybe like the Evil Dead sort of level of tongue-in-cheek humor.
Yeah, it's clearly an adult game, and, you know, it's M for mature. But at PAX East, the Gearbox guys announced that they were raising the level cap. Now, I believe they did that in the original Borderlands, which is a game that I never really played, although I did buy it for $7 with all the DLC.
And you should! What are you thinking?
Yeah, and
great game.
I played through the first few missions, and I recognized Firestone, which is actually in Borderlands 2, which I thought was pretty cool. Getting back to the story, they announced a level cap increase. So they're adding 11.
So we've talked about this before, the level cap coming. But to come out with 11 levels sort of requires a retooling of the game. And you spoiled this a little bit, but how did they make the game still challenging for those of us that are already level 50?
Well, Ultimate Vault Hunter mode, which is the new third playthrough of the game, starts when you are level 50.
So for folks at home, third playthrough is the important key here.
Yeah, so you have the first playthrough, which will get you up to around 34, 36, depending on side missions and if you play online.
Right.
And then at that point, it unlocks True Vault Hunter mode, which is the one that I famously said was way too hard to play. And then I
said it was the game the way it should have been.
Right. And that's also very important. Now, the third playthrough starts after Ultimate Vault Hunter mode, or not Ultimate, but True Vault Hunter mode finishes. So you go and kill Captain Jack and the Warrior again, and then you're able to start over. And at this point, it changes the game mechanic to where it removes...
Oh, wait a minute, was that a spoiler? What?
Well, it's somewhat of a spoiler, but it's also important for the third playthrough.
So third playthrough. I'm digressing. I apologize.
Yeah, no.
So third Vault Hunter...
Yeah, well, it starts over...
Ultimate Vault Hunter mode, sorry.
Yeah, Ultimate Vault. You got to get that right. No, it starts all over, but it doesn't go through all the help stuff, so it doesn't start at the very, very beginning of the game. And at that point, it starts, everybody is at level 50. So ideally, you're at level 50, you're at the level cap, and then you can start over. And instead of the game scaling to the person playing the game, it's scaling to whoever is the highest level in the game.
Oh, so no more chasing around for the free ride.
Right. So say I am level 50 and you join and you're a level 55. All of a sudden, everybody increases to level 55 plus or minus two levels.
Well, that's good, though, because it keeps the game challenging for the most powerful player, which tended to mean that you were bored before.
Yeah. Well,
or babysitting or...
Yeah, well, it's still a third playthrough of the exact same game, whereas I think they could have done a choose-your-own-adventure and maybe split it off into a couple of different branches to where you could finish the game in it one way or another way. But I digress on that as well.
Sure. So Gearbox, if you're listening, give us something. I mean, even if it's just one new storyline, something.
Yeah.
In the next DLC, they'll make it up to us, though, right?
Well, yeah, there's, what, four DLCs that were promised in Season Pass, and we have three, so... We have also a new DLC was announced that should be out later this year. With the new upgrade, with the level cap increase, you get pearlescent weapons, which is something from Borderlands 2.
Mm-hmm.
They also announced that there's going to be a new character class, which is a bandit psycho.
So, now hold on to correct. The pearlescent weapons are from the original Borderlands.
Oh, sorry.
And we're the ultimate rarity. So, there's a new level of rarity then.
Yes, new level of rarity. Although I've looked at some of the weapons, because you can check them out on the wiki, and they look to be just kind of a mod of the legendary.
Oh.
To the point where I'm not sure if they're going to be very beneficial to people, but...
More like trophy case items then?
I believe so.
Oh, okay.
And to go along with the trophy case items, they increased the amount of iridium that you can collect and also added more upgrades. So you can add more spots in the bank, more spots in the backpack, more ammo, more...
And for that, I'd like to say thank you, because one of the things that I think was underutilized in Borderlands 2 was the ability to try different builds out, because you can respec your characters in three different skill trees that are really very different, and the combinations of those two, added to some of the different types of equipment, really led to some interesting experimentation and sometimes some pretty cool builds. But when you limit the amount of gear that you can have on a character or in their bank or locker, if you will, you really made it difficult to experiment with those, which took away some of the replayability.
Yeah, it's true. And I've been, you know, my Mecro is my favorite character now that I've been playing. And I pulled a build off of YouTube, of all places.
Wow, okay.
And it turns out that this particular build was friendly to collecting class mods. So I have like six different class mods that I can just interchange.
Oh.
And it'll perk different skills based off of what I put into those little classes. Now, mm-hmm. the legendary Mecromancer class mod,
right,
which is the legendary drop, that doesn't work in this build. But by adding 10 more skill points, I'm able to roll that one in. So once I reach level 61, I can start playing around with that build, which is kind of nice.
Well, and for me, it gives some viability. I really like playing Axton, who is kind of a remake of the first Borderlands character of Roland, in that he drops a turret. But I never really found a good combination that I liked. And I've been kind of searching the internet. But the addition of 11 new levels gives me 11 more potential points to play with builds.
We talked about this in one of the past podcasts. I was watching Master Kiz. He's one of the Borderlands guys that does some live streaming and YouTubing. He played through Ultimate Vault Hunter mode with his Siren, which is his favorite character. And I want to say that he never upgraded his weapons. He was using the Sandhawk and the B-Shield all the way through, all based off of how he spec'd his character.
Interesting.
So just by adding a few more skill points, he's able to use the level 50 weapons all the way through to the end.
Yeah, and I noticed that he likes to sprinkle in class mods that give him, like, shock damage or whatever, as opposed to, you know, the experience levels or the defensive ones that I tend to gravitate towards.
Yeah, and it's just the way that he plays. And, you know, I like to kind of tank some damage and get in there and shoot, which is great for the Mecro because of the way that I'm spec'd. So Blood Soak Shields. It's really hard to say. it's one of those where if you get a kill, it adds shield capacity back to you. So whatever damage you might have taken by getting up in front and blowing somebody away, it comes back, and then you can just go on to the next one, which is kind of nice.
So we've been talking a lot about this, and I want to revisit real quick. You'd mentioned that they released also some teasers for a new character.
Yes, which is the badass Psycho. The Psycho Bandit in Borderlands 2, as you know, is one of the primary villains that you're after all the time.
And one of the unique flavored aspects of Borderlands. So a quick description.
They are, well, let's see, there was a side mission you could take, and they were supposedly the Dahl miners that were left over after Dahl got kicked off the planet.
Uh-huh.
So they were your family and friends and stuff like that. They were left behind, and they were just left to do whatever they wanted. So these are the bandits, the people living in the wasteland.
They're combat method du jour, if you will, is to run at you like kamikazes, more or less. Some of them actually will run up and then explode.
Yeah, there's the suicide bandit that will come up and run up behind you, which is really annoying because they're always behind you. And then you hear this beep, 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 and that's basically them holding up a grenade and going to blow you up. There's some of the bandits that actually will have weapons and be able to shoot you. So some of them are acid and some of them are just straight bullets.
Right.
The Psycho, which they modeled after this new character, was the one that threw the axe at you all the time. And that's actually one of his action skills.
So he likes to run up and lob throwing axes at you. And he can hit you in some pretty amazing ways because they arc in and land on you. So even if you don't have a direct line of sight, he can still sometimes hit you, which can be really, really annoying.
Yes, yes. Annoying is the operative word there. And there's not something that you can shoot out of the sky like some of the projectiles from the Bully Mongs. You just have to be able to see where he's at and try to move out of the way. Now, the way they roll that into an actual character class is at PAX East, they were explaining that if you go into the action skill and you get a kill, their health will come back to you.
Nice.
And also, if you go down into Fight for Your Life, they brought in the dynamite, so you can throw dynamite at your adversary. And if you get close enough, you can actually, right before you die, it holds up the dynamite, and if it blows up right next to him and you get a kill, you get a second wind.
So I want to talk about that a little bit, because that's kind of one of the interesting things that they're exploring with this new character that are somewhat unique to Borderlands 2, and that is, in Borderlands 2, you have a shield that you carry, and when you take damage, it degenerates, and then you have a lifeline, of course. Mm-hmm. And then when your life degenerates, you have a certain amount of time that can be affected by your skills and the items that you're carrying to make a kill, and if you do, it restores your life. Basically, I wouldn't say it regenerates you, but it keeps you from dying, and it restores you with a minimal amount of health, which can put you in a... And I had this happen when we were playing together the other night.
Yeah.
A state where you die, regen, die, regen, die, regen, because you're able to get the kills, but you don't have enough time to regenerate your life. So what this... Krieg is his name, right?
Krieg, yeah,
the psycho?
Yeah,
what Krieg does is he messes with that time. So he has a lot of skills that happen during that fight for your lifetime. Mm-hmm. So there are some items in the game that I tend to ignore that give you additional fight for your lifetime and increase your strength that are going to be really intriguing to combine with Krieg.
Right. The way that Gearbox explained it, it's one of those characters where if you like to get in and tank a lot of damage and take a lot of damage, Krieg will go from full health to empty health in almost back and forth motions. And you may not actually be in fight for your life, but by using your action skill, you can get health back, which is something counterproductive. Like with Axton, if you got a really low health, you're going to run away or throw your turret and run away and try to get some distance between you. If you're a Siren, you're going to put someone in phase lock. And if you got a bunch of people around you, you're going to get back up to the point where letting your phase lock try to either damage that enemy or give you enough time to get around the corner so that you can regenerate some health. With Krieg, it's more like start your action skill and start getting health back.
So it sounds like really what they're trying to encourage you to do is not unlike the psycho in the game. As you lose health, you're going to be more likely to engage the enemy in hand-to-hand combat or up close so that you can use those after-death skills.
Yeah. Now, it's not a melee-only character.
That's good to know.
Yeah. The assassin is also very similar in that you have a melee tree, and then you also have the sniping tree. Well, with Krieg, you also have the melee tree, and you have gun trees.
And it looked like, if I could believe from the teaser, that the third tree really was primarily around fight for your life skills, although they've been very careful not to get a good look at that.
Yeah, I think they did that on purpose. Uh-huh. So. But yeah, the last thing that they talked about was the fourth DLCs, and they didn't mention anything except showing a teaser where Tina was up there, and they were going to play a version of, I would say, Dungeons and Dragons called...
Bunkers and Bandits?
Bunkers and Badasses, I want to
say. Oh, that's right. So we've posted this in the forums, and we'll link in the show notes. But if you're an old-school gamer like me, you've spent some time playing tabletop games and role-playing games, then you're definitely going to get nice warm fuzzies and wonder, what exactly are they thinking, and where is this going? But it's cool. It's worth a view.
Should we speculate on what we think it's going to be?
It is hard to say, because if you look at the direction the game's going, the tease is, and the rumor is, that this is going to be the largest of the DLCs and possibly the last of the DLCs.
Right. We've played the DLCs that have come out, and they're really short campaigns. I'm going to say it's like maybe a third of the actual game. Now, if they make it considerably larger than that, that might be maybe half of the Borderlands 2 game.
Uh-huh.
Maybe they're going, you know, this is my speculation. As Tina and the group are playing the role-playing game, they go and say, okay, well, you got to go as a dungeon master. It's like, okay, we're going to enter this dungeon, and this is our...
Oh, and then it would be the next mission?
And that would be the mission that you're going on.
Nice. It'd be kind of entertaining to see the cutscenes, if you will, from an RPG perspective as you're performing them in-game. I like that. I see that.
That's kind of what I'm thinking that it might be. I really don't see Gearbox as doing a choose-your-own-adventure sort of thing.
No.
Because there's a lot of, not necessarily like game dynamics, but there's a lot of story arcs that you have to make sure work. So it's like if you go to this one, it won't break something else. Mm-hmm. And there's just a lot of, almost infinite amount of QA that needs to go into that. So.
Well, if there's one thing we can count on, since they've released the level cap increases, this new area is definitely going to have characters that will challenge you above 50 levels. And that is what I'm looking forward to, I think, the most.
Yeah.
One more playthrough?
Yeah,
I guess if I have to. But give me something new. I can take these big 50-plus characters and go fight.
The other bonus to the level cap increase is that if you play in true Vault Hunter mode, you are gathering experience. So you can go after Pyrocaustic Pete and get a bar or two of experience. Mm-hmm. You can also go after the warrior. You can replay some of the original missions. You can help people out. And you're going to be getting credit for playing that way. So you might be at a level 51 before you start into Ultimate Vault Hunter mode, which is kind of nice. So if you're not into playing through the game a third time, you know, you can do the DLC and ramp yourself up. You can play online, you know, like our friends from up north.
One thing that is clear to point out is that Borderlands 2, I think without a doubt, has captured the majority of our playtime. And we've talked about the only real negatives about it. But the reality is, this is, I think, and Dennis would agree, the best game out there right now for multiplayer play. So if you're not already playing this, really, what's your excuse?
Well, especially since Amazon had a one-day deal. You could get the game plus the season pass for...
$25?
$25.
Oh my gosh.
You know, in the original Borderlands, I got that for $7 off of sale. So it's getting cheaper. Believe it or not, I bought the game for $25 for the significant other in the building. Believe it or not, my son likes watching the game. It keeps him entertained, and sometimes he'll sit there and just fall asleep while we're playing, which is kind of nice. So,
well, that's the cel shading. It tones the violence down to more like a cartoon, which is nice.
Yep. So now we're playing together, and as I was getting her ramped up, I started a new character so we could play through the first few missions and get her acclimated.
So there you go, playing with the wife. I'm working on that one. Let's see, with my three level 50s, that's 6, 7, 8 playthroughs already, not counting my new ones for the Ultimate Vault Hunter. So your $25 investment for me has bought 8 different runs through the game already, and I'm coming back for more. So that is money very well spent.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes. If you have questions, drop by the forums or email us at podcast@ninjalane.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Ninja Lane by subscribing to our RSS, now available on iTunes, follow us on Twitter, or join us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2013. Thanks for listening.